Life Enthusiast Co-op Podcast, restoring vitality to you and to the planet. Let's join our hosts, Scott Patton and Martin Batella, now. Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Life Enthusiast Co-op Podcast, restoring vitality to you and to the planet. I'm your co-host, Scott Patton, along with Martin Batella, and we've been talking about your health and giving you some education on it, and this is part three of our multi-part series, where we're just going through all the basics of health education that you can find on the Life Enthusiast Co-op website, particularly if you click on the link that says Health Education. We thought we would get into all of these topics in a little more depth over the next 50-odd weeks. So if you want to figure out where we are, you can just go there and take a look, and you'll see lots of more in-depth information than we can even get to in this podcast there. And this week we're going to be talking about pH balance and the impact that has on your body and on your health. And Martin, just before we went on the air, you said this was one of your favorite pieces of education, that you just love talking about this.
Well, yes, Scott, it's totally critical. This is a crucial point. People who understand this manage their health. People who don't understand it manage their illness. There's a wonderful book out. It's by Theodore Baruti, and the title is Alkalize or Die.
You think he could be a little subtler? A little less subtle, I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think you could find a more appropriate title for it. And truly, I don't mean to really diminish it down to just that, where, you know, acid is death and alkaline is life. It's not that simple, but in the most common terms, let's go with that. There is an extra page in the pH balancing, which is test for metabolic imbalances, and I want to use this as a disclaimer that no, we're not trying to boil it down to this single point of it's all about pH balance, but it's critically important.
And it's if you have the right pH balance, then everything kind of works a lot, like the supplements and the enzymes and everything works a lot easier and a lot better, right?
Well, correct. What this is about is the pH balance of your lymphatic system. And the ideal balanced pH of the lymphatic system matches that of your blood. And your blood has to be at about 7.35, slightly alkaline. The 7.0 is the neutral, and 7.35 is just a teeny bit alkaline. And when you're born, the pH balance of the lymphatic system is matching that of your blood. And as you're going on, and your ability to detoxify is not keeping up with the inflow of acidifying influences, you're slowly becoming more acidic. And the really important thing here is this. The oxygen-carrying capacity of the lymph is directly related to its pH. By the time your pH has dropped down to 6.0, you have lost 94% of the oxygen carrying capacity of your lymph. Now, why would this be important, huh?
That was exactly going to be my question.
So why do I care?
Right. Well, so what is the impact of oxygen inside our body? I mean, it's massive, right?
Well, it's totally important. First of all, you need to understand that even though the red blood cells carry the oxygen from your lungs through the system, they actually hand it over to the lymphatic system at the end, because the lymph is that which is bathing all of the cells at the tissue level. So, for instance, you're walking. If it doesn't matter how much oxygen you're getting into your lungs and into your blood, if it's not getting to the cells, you still can't move very fast.
Right.
And I saw that just the other day on my walk. I saw this older fellow, he must have been, you know, 80-something, and he He was just shuffling. He was just barely capable to keep up with his dog. And he was just shuffling up the hill and huffing and puffing. And you could see that there just wasn't any ability to have, you know, to exercise. And I speculate that this was caused by just that, the pH balance of his lymphatic system. So, anyway, ability to deliver oxygen to the cells will influence strongly its ability to convert fuel into energy.
So one way of looking at that is if you had a fire and our body was actually like a fire and we're not getting any oxygen to the fire, we all know the fire dies out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And similarly, when our blood can't transport the oxygen because it's too acidic, all the energy in all our cells basically dies out.
Right. So what happens to blood is maintained in a very narrow balance between 7.3 and 7.4. Anything outside of that is sure death. And the body will pull in minerals from its mineral stores to try and keep things in balance.
Like calcium out of the bone.
Exactly. Calcium is the most alkalizing mineral that the body stores. It's calcium ion is two pluses, you know, it's two electrons in the valence layer. So calcium can supply or balance two electrons. And yes, so that's, you know, you store calcium in your bones so that when you need it, you can pull it. And that's where the osteoporosis comes from, is where people are actually pulling the calcium out of their bones, and they're not weighing any less. It's just that the
right.
calcium is now in its liquid form in the lymphatic system, buffering the acidity that exists there.
So what can we do about that?
Alkalize or die. So
get the book, right?
Well, that certainly, or at least go read on the life-enthusiast.com, health education, pH balancing.
Exactly.
There are multiple things that you can do. You know, the most acidifying influence in your life is stress. So
I thought for sure you were going to say something else, so that's interesting.
Yeah. Lack of sleep, especially lack of sleep before midnight. You know, you should be in bed by 10 or at least by 11. Anything that you don't... if you're not sleeping before 10 o'clock, you're not allowing your body's natural cleansing cycle to kick in.
Yeah, we've talked about that on previous podcasts, haven't we?
That's right. So you're acidifying yourself by staying up late. You're acidifying yourself by having negative thoughts. You know, the wrong kind of excitement. So then we could go over into the food side of things, right?
Right.
Really acidifying things are all chemicals that are non-living. So at the top of the list are pharmaceutical drugs, whether they're prescription or over-the-counter or recreational. All of that is acidifying. Sugar, aspartame, Splenda, all of those things. Real bad news. Wheat, you know, pizza, spaghetti, all of that. Bad news. Anything that's starchy. Alcohol, rye, or whiskey, or vodka, or beer, or wine. All of that. It's all acidifying.
What about something like coffee? As we all know, you know, everyone goes and has a morning coffee, right?
Yeah, coffee has, it's sort of like a double whammy. There are these alkaloids that are actually quite good for the body. They're antioxidants. But the net result of drinking coffee is, again, quite acidifying. So it's not good news at all. We actually have a table in the website, in the diet guidelines for pH balancing, where we have this beautifully colored table that shows you, you know, what is really acidifying and what is really alkalizing.
I see blueberries are among the most acidic of the berries.
They are acidic berries, that's right. Now, what you need to understand is this. You cannot, how do I say this? You should have about 70 or perhaps 80% of your diet in the alkalizing and 20 to 30% in the acidifying. You cannot just have everything in the one corner. I mean, that's an extreme. That would kill you just as surely as having the balance the other way around.
Yeah, and the reason we're talking about alkalizing the body and not acidifying the body is because everyone's having chocolate and coffee and processed foods and pizza and wheat and everything else. If they were eating lemons and limes and asparagus and parsley and that sort of stuff, and they were getting too alkaline, we'd be telling them that they should be having blueberries and cranberries and that sort of stuff.
That's right, yes, because there is such a thing as alkalosis, and there are symptoms of it described on our website. But acidosis is much more common. Now, here's a classic example of acidosis. When the terrain is acidic, viruses proliferate. The most common virus is the flu, right? The influenza.
Yep. Yeah.
So when does the influenza kick in? Right after Thanksgiving. And when is the second wave come in?
Right after Christmas.
Yes, sir. I'm glad you're on the ball here. And why is that?
We're talking about this before.
Yeah, and why is that? Because we all get together and we, number one, don't exercise. Number two, drink too much. Number three, eat heavy acidifying foods like, you know, turkey dinner. I mean, there's no alkalinity there.
That's right.
And, you know, a week after that, you have sufficiently lowered your pH to the area where the virus just kicks in, and boom, you're done.
Right.
So what do we tell people about that? Well, food combining helps. Food combining is something we have hinted at in our previous podcast. It's a concept where you eat only one concentrated food on a plate that's loaded with water-rich foods such as a salad or steamed vegetables or stir-fry or something like that. So, never mind influenza. There are much worse things associated with acidity. You know, these are, headaches. Tired.
I was going to say, Martin, if someone was wondering, well, am I a little bit too acidic or not, you know, or where am I, what sort of things could they look for? Now, so I'm glad you've brought that up, because I was just about to ask you about, what sort of things could people look and say, oh, yeah, I'm kind of like this, so maybe I do have an issue here.
Well, you know, eczema and acne on the skin, anxiety,
our,
you know, pardon me?
Most of our teenagers are acidic?
Well, yeah, they just have weaned themselves off of mother's milk, which is alkalizing, and they have started replacing that with these beautiful drinks that the cola industry is providing.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are right up there at the top of the chart of acidity. I mean,
yeah,
you could even measure
Big Macs and pizza and...
Yes. Spaghetti.
Spaghetti, yeah.
Chips, refried chips. Foods, all that. Anyway.
French fries.
Yeah. So as they're hitting this in stride and they're just piling on these calories because their bodies are growing, so they have this high calorie intake, but they're shoveling in food that's low density of nutrients and high volume of calories. And it's mostly acidic, or acidifying. So, yeah, anyway,
so
acne, eczema, yeah, that's one.
Yes.
Restless leg syndrome, you know, you've seen people that are just unable to sit still, you know, just... You can see that knee popping up and down, you know, under the table and all of that. That's a sure sign. Hyperactivity goes along with that. It's just a stronger form of that.
Hmm.
A huge appetite goes along with it. you know, the more acidic you are, the more you want to eat. It's just like, it's like a vicious circle. You're bloating. You're just piling on pounds like it's out of style. And then of course, the chronic diseases like the gout and chronic indigestion, chronic diarrhea, and diabetes, and the immune, like fibromyalgia, lupus, and so on. The list associated with acid alkaline imbalance is very long and includes pretty much every chronic disease. Cancer is the worst of the lot. Cancer, see, somewhere on our website you could find writing about the two theories. One is called monomorphic and the other one's called pleomorphic. The monomorphic theory is what the mainstream medicine believes in, that there is no such thing as a conversion of a virus into a bacterium, into a fungus, into a tumor. Whereas the pleomorphic say, much like the insect, and if you didn't watch it, you would have a hard time believing it. You know, if you say an insect starts out as an egg, then it converts into a larva, like a caterpillar. Yep. Then it converts into a pupa, you know, like that dormant stage where it just sits there for a while. And then finally it pops out of the pupa as the imago, as the finished insect, you know, the butterfly. I mean, what is the similarity between an egg, a colorful caterpillar, a hard-shelled pupa, yeah, cocoon of sort, and then the butterfly? I mean, they don't even look similar.
Yeah, if you didn't know, you would say there's no way they were the same thing.
Right, in a similar way.
Or a tadpole and a frog.
Yeah, tadpole. Well, tadpole to a frog, there is a similarity, sort of, after a while, because you start seeing the legs pop out, right?
Right.
But when it first comes out and all you see is this little head with a little whippy tail at the end,
yeah,
you wouldn't know. I mean, you would think that that's some kind of a round snake.
Yeah, or a little fish, strange type of fish.
Yeah, possibly strange-looking fish. And anyway, so what happens is the modern medicine, as we have it, has only studied dead blood through microscopes and samples that they have prepared by adding things like formaldehyde or blood thinners to the blood so that it wouldn't coagulate on them. So they don't see how this thing changes from one stage to another. And yet there's a branch of research called live blood analysis that uses typically dark field microscopes, which they take the blood on the spot, stick it on the slide, and examine it right there. They have about a 15 to 20 minute window to see what's going on in the blood before it dies.
Right.
In most doctors' offices, that's not how it's done. They send you to a lab, they take your blood, they put it in a vial, and then they send it off maybe 3 or 4 or 6 days later, it's analyzed.
So it's pretty well all dead.
Yeah. So the research that they do on that is frozen. There's no living transformation visible. You can't, for instance, take a blood sample, do a live blood analysis, then get you to ingest something, wait for 20, 30 minutes to see how it changes your body, and take another snapshot of it.
Right.
Which is, for instance, we have that on our pages about the Himalayan crystal salt. The folks that we buy the salt from, they did the live blood analysis research on ingesting the salt brine, doing the salt brine therapy. And it shows that, you know, sticky blood 30 minutes after you have had a glass of water with a teaspoon of the brine becomes not sticky. All of a sudden, the blood that looks pretty sick, you know, heading towards cancer, you take one glass of the salt water and you're headed toward health. So anyway, that's, you asked, how could we see the evidence? We could see it in live blood analysis. And the biggest one is that as the pH of the blood changes, we can see the transformation of these little critters from viruses to bacteria to funguses or fungi to tumors. And it's a one continuous process. And it can be reversed through the change of the pH in the body. So people who end up with cancer, if they manage to alkalize themselves, they will reverse the cancer. It will completely disappear from the body.
Wow. So how do you become more alkaline and less acidic?
Well, we mentioned the biggest acidifiers, right? Stress and food intake, of course. Pesticides, herbicides, all of that stuff is not helpful. So you need to detox. We'll talk about detox. No, we talked about detox in the cleansing section. There's,
right.
You know, the foot spa for detox, for doing it radically, or the Miracle 2 baths with the neutralizer and all that. That's going to pull the toxins out. Eating in a food combining manner, where you will have only one concentrated food on a plate and a water-rich food diet. You know, salads and steamed veggies and raw fruits.
Filtered water that doesn't have lots of fluoride and chlorine in it?
Mm-hmm. Well, here's an interesting thing. Distilled water's pH is 5.5, which is quite acidic. It's useful only if you are trying to detoxify a lot of toxins in a short run. If you were to use distilled water or even reverse osmosis water, which is also acidic, for extended periods of time, you're not doing yourself any favor. You should have a water ionizer. And, you know, the simplest water ionizer we have is the Precious Prills. They alkalize the water quite successfully. We have something fancier called the e-water machine, which is only a $300 investment. Or we have been referring people to water ionizers like the Kangen filter, which, you know, there's a high price on it. $4,400 seems like a high price, but anybody who has a chronic disease that's caused by acidity in the system will get it reversed by using a water ionizer. So what would you rather have, a $100,000 medical bill from your cancer treatment or a $4,400 bill for your water ionizer?
There you go. That's, of course, always the big question, isn't it?
Yeah. So what's the perspective there? Huh? It's difficult for people to get their head wrapped around prevention.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you find out how your pH is doing? For $10, we sell a pH paper roll with a chart attached to the back of the dispenser. So you take a piece of the pH paper, about 1 inch long, and in the morning you put it under your tongue, wet it with your saliva, and take a look, compare it to the chart. If it's somewhere near 7, you know, 6.7 to 7.2, you're doing just great. Anything below that, you have a reason to concern. Anything below 6 is cancer territory. Anything below 5 is death territory. Like irreversible final terminal stages.
So if you're not dying, you can be pretty safe in saying that you're over 5.
Oh yeah, pretty close, yes. Yeah, anything below 5.5 is just ring all alarm bells all at once. You know, if at 6.0 and above, you have time to take it easy and do it, just lifestyle changes. At below 5, it's time for absolutely radical and drastic lifestyle changes.
So, you know, as I'm listening to you talk about all of this, Martin, I'm thinking, okay, I want to alkalize my body, and there's this, I remember Pop Pop Fizz Fizz came into my head, you know, Eno, and these drinks that people would take after they've, you know, drunk too much the night before, sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Or upset tummy. And I'm wondering, would that, you know, what would happen if you took, like, baking soda and just drank it, or some of these Tums?
Well, it does make sense. And people who have a cancer problem, there is a wonderful and effective therapy that's been recently promoted, which is a mix of baking soda with maple syrup. You know, cancer loves sugar. So you mix three parts maple syrup with one part baking soda, mix it in a pan, and serve it, tablespoon at a time. And as the cancer cells suck in the sugar, because they live on it, they burn a lot of sugar, they get a sidekick, which is the baking soda, which instantly alkalizes the terrain, which instantly makes it impossible for cancer to exist. So you're, you know, it's just phenomenal. And the success people have been having with that is quite remarkable. Now, here's the, so in an emergency or, you know, in a from time to time basis, this is just great. But what happens if you alkalize yourself too much? You will alkalize your stomach and give yourself heartburn to end all heartburns. Or right. The mother, if you're neutralizing, a good idea. But if you do that on a consistent after they have eaten stupid foods, they create a problem on in their digestive system. Everything's supposed to be correct. Your saliva is alkaline. Your stomach juices are acid. Your small intestine juices are alkaline. Your lower bowel juices are acid. It just changes from one to the other, from one to the other, in proper. Right. In order to digest a piece of meat, in your has to be quite acidic. And the stomach comes out at about 2.5 on the pH, 2.0 even. And, you know, the medical approach to having heartburn, disable their acid pumps with Prilosec or something of that sort. Bad idea. You know, bad idea. The right thing would be to eat in proper manner, you know, food combining and that sort of thing. Because most people don't have heartburn because of too much acidity. They usually have heartburn from not enough acidity. You know, if you have, what's the word? If you're burping,
that's actually,
you know?
Kind of interesting, because all of us would say that it feels very acidic, not it feels very alkaline.
Right, but if you're burping after a meal,
yeah.
There's a wonderful high school experiment. You take a tablespoon of vinegar and pour it on top of a tablespoon of baking soda.
Yeah.
And what you get is a whole bunch of fizzing. You know, it's just...
That's right.
It's bubbling, and it's also warm. There's heat coming off of that. And that's exactly what's going on in your stomach. You have a release of alkalizing and acidifying chemicals all at the same time. So you're now making bubbles and fizz. And heat. And it feels terrible. So what is, you need more power to the digestion to actually get down the foods quicker and more effectively. And then send it on down the small intestine, where your pancreas will inject baking soda, yeah, soda carbonate. And that neutralizes the chyme that just stomach. Neutralize it in the stomach and send it there. You're asking for trouble. Digested, small intestine will not be able to successfully deal with. So soon enough, you're starting to overload your liver with underdigested proteins, and then you start getting these wonderful dark circles under your eyes, and the swollen, puffy eyelids, and yeah.
There you go. So there are lots of different physical symptoms, and really, you know, how hard would it be to have some filtered water, some spring water, some good water with
some mineral drops added to it.
And some lemon.
Right. Yes. Well, you know, the Aja minerals that we talked about, 20 episodes ago, where we have these wonderful trace minerals, sulfur extracted from the black mica, you know, just the most wonderful trace mineral supplements. If you add that to your distilled water, you have about the right stuff. So, have we scared people enough into thinking that perhaps pH balance is an important thing?
I hope so. What I would do is just briefly read off some of the items from the pH balance page on life-enthusiast.com that are alkaline. And people can think about them and say, okay, you know, would it be hard to put some of these into
my diet?
Diet? right? So,
yes.
So, for example, lemons and watermelon and lime and grapefruit, mangoes, papaya are the most alkaline. Blueberries, cranberries, prunes are the most acidic.
Right.
Vegetables, you have asparagus, onions, parsley, raw spinach, broccoli, garlic. Olive oil is very alkaline. In the nuts, almonds is very alkalizing, and peanuts and walnuts is very acidic.
Yes, that's. Now, this is not to say, you know, walnut oil, for instance, is an excellent omega-3 source.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be intelligent to have only, a handful of it. Having an O. Henry bar, every day with chocolate, sugar, peanuts, and caramel or whatever they add to it, that's bad.
Yeah. What's interesting, too, is while raw spinach is very alkalizing, cooked spinach is moderately acidic.
That's right.
So we keep going back to live, right?
Yes, yeah. Cooked fruit, bad news. Any fruits that you have cooked has gone to the dark side.
The dark side of the force.
Yes, that's right.
So, Martin, if somebody wanted to contact you and talk a little bit more about the diet or how they could become a little more alkaline, how can they do that?
Well, Life Enthusiast Co-op at 1-866-543-3388. Or there's a phone that rings on my desk at 775-299-4661. Just listen to a whole bunch of these podcasts. We keep going over the same topics, this time in more depth.
Yeah.
Or just head to the health education pages on www.life-enthusiast.com.
Podcast, restoring vitality to you and to the planet. See you all next time, everybody.
Thanks for listening.